Do you have a child who, until a certain point in time, was, for lack of a better expression, behaviorally, I hate to use the word normal or mainstream, but there wasn't anything out of the ordinary that struck you as being odd. And then at some point in time, things start to change.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio. And we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com, and as always, it's my pleasure and honor to be with you here on another brand new episode. And today, I'm super excited, not only because we're going to be talking about something, to be honest, I didn't know about until I got a letter from a listener asking me to explore more about it. And when I dove into it, I was like, wow, I had never even heard of this, nor knew I knew about it. And she asked me to reach out to a very famous author who writes and talks about this very subject. So let me introduce her, because I know you guys are going to be so impressed. Her name is Beth Allison Maloney, and she is the de facto national attorney advocate for the recognition and treatment of PANDAS and PANS. Now, you might be asking what those acronyms are for, and I'm going to just read it right off the list here. It's pediatric autoimmune neurodegenerative disease associated with strep and or other pathogens. And this is an autoimmune condition caused by bacteria or viruses, and it typically results in a change in behavior. And I was so fascinated as I started to read it. And Beth has written two books on it, one called Saving Sammy, and the other is Childhood Interrupted. And this is a voluntary role that she assumed after her son suffered severe mental illness as a result of an undiagnosed strep infection. And I knew that strep was bad, but I had no idea that it could result in these types of things. And she has an amazing bio we'll get more in depth on, but I want to get her on because, to me, I am absolutely wanting to know more about this. Welcome to the show, Beth.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Now, I had never heard of this, and when I started reading about it, not only did it pull up my heartstrings because it seems to be a pediatric thing, I have a quick question. Does it affect adults, too, if they have an undiagnosed strep infection?
I think it can affect adults. Generally, I believe that if you are going to have this particular type of reaction to an infection, it tends to show up. When you're a child, it would be, let's say, unlikely that you would have a series of strep episodes or infections as a child, not really have anything other than the traditional symptoms, and then suddenly those symptoms would show up in an adult. However, as we all know, there are exceptions to the rule. I think there are also situations where what I'm finding is adults it was overlooked when they were a child as a possible cause of a long-term mental health diagnosis, whether it be obsessive compulsive disorder or some sort of tic disorder. And then as an adult, often as a young adult, they themselves come across the information and wonder, could this have been what triggered something in them long ago. The research is pediatric, so that's why it's really known as a pediatric disorder. But certainly there would be instances, I'm sure, where we have adult onset.
I have so many questions. But first, Beth, share your story.
My story is that when I'm the mom of three now young adult men, when my middle son, Sammy, turned 12 years old, he suddenly started having a series of behaviors that really were completely inconsistent with anything we had seen before. Started with him holding his eyes shut, with his hands in front of him as he was feeling his way around our front yard. And within a period of 4 to 6 weeks, he was actually entirely unable to even leave my home. And this was a kiddo who went to school every single day and loved it and did well and couldn't wait to get there and suddenly couldn't get himself out the door. And this ended up causing him to miss all of sixth grade and all of seventh grade. We, by happenstance, learned that it might be a strep infection that was causing this. And with that information, I immediately took him to the doctor and had his blood tested for strep, and he turned up positive. And as far as I had known, he had never had a strep infection in his entire life. So that, with that information, I was then able to find a physician. It wasn't easy, but I eventually found a physician who did treat the disorder, and he ended up completely healed. He's now almost 29 years old, and despite having been told that he would spend the rest of his life in and out of some sort of mental facility, he completely recovered, went back to school, graduated from high school, graduated from Carnegie Mellon with a degree in computer science and mathematics, lives in Seattle, which is way too far away from me, but you know, is happily pursuing a career there as a computer scientist. And he doesn't have the overwhelming OCD and tics that just completely confined him to our home. So it is a story of complete recovery. What happened as far as the first book is that about five years, I immediately had written a manuscript, and about 5 years after that, I put it away. I went back on the internet and realized that if he had gotten sick 5 years from when he got well, we would be in the same position we'd been in before. The information was not available. You couldn't find doctors to treat it. And that's what propelled me to really pull that manuscript out, look at it with a fine eye, cut out everything that didn't move that story forward. And fortunately, it was sold, and many people are now aware of the information.
Oh, that is so awesome. I'm thrilled that your son has completely recovered. I can't imagine the trauma that puts the whole family through when something like that happens. And it's so common with autoimmune to be told so many things like you'll never recover, or it's all in your head. I can't imagine the trying to go through with your child and find a doctor that will at first listen to you and then pay attention and do some research and try to find things out. Now, you mentioned a blood test that showed that the strep infection. The listener wrote us and said that they'd had initial blood tests done for both strep and Lyme, and it came back in the quote-unquote normal range. What happens when it's like that?
Well, sometimes it can happen. We were very fortunate. The nature of Lyme and the nature of strep are different in that with strep, what happens is when we have an infection, when we have any infection, our body produces antibodies to attack the bacteria or attack the virus. And in strep, our bodies produce antibodies to strep. And sometimes in some children, the antibodies cross the blood-brain barrier and enter the brain and attack an area of the brain that controls behaviors. And those behaviors are then the manifestation of the disease. Mm-hmm. In Lyme, the difference is that the bacteria itself enters the brain. So it's a different mechanism that I think it's important to understand. Both are difficult to treat, but I'm not a doctor, but I think probably Lyme may be more difficult because the bacteria itself enters the brain as opposed to strep, where it's strep antibodies, and those antibodies have a limited lifespan. So if you can get the infection under control, your system, in theory, stops producing the antibodies. Sometimes we are fortunate enough, as in Sammy's case, to register the antibodies in a blood test. There are some children who that does not happen for. And so again, the question then becomes, as a clinical observation, do you have a child who, until a certain point in time, was, for lack of a better expression, behaviorally, I hate to use the word normal or mainstream, but there wasn't anything out of the ordinary that struck you as being odd. And then at some point in time, things start to change. So they may have separation anxiety, for example. A child who has been toilet trained suddenly starts wetting the bed again. Hair pulling can be a sign. So there can be various behaviors that should be a signal to, we would hope, a pediatrician, that when a mom or a dad brings the child in and says, you know, last week there was no problem going to kindergarten. She spent the entire summer looking forward to it, and suddenly I can't get her to leave. And that the doctor thinks, I wonder if there might be an infection base here, as opposed to just saying, well, she'll grow out of it, or, well, that's what happens with kindergartners. Mm-hmm. Too often, I think the signs of this are just dismissed. Another thing that typically happens is when the children have some sort of tics, you know, some sort of a movement that you can't really account for why it's happening. And doctors will often say to parents, well, he'll grow out of it. And very often the tics have been prompted because the child either has caught an infection or is in the presence of an infection. So, for example, I like to use the analogy of a peanut allergy. You don't have to actually eat the peanut to have the reaction. So some of these kids, their systems, for whatever reason, and I can't really explain that to you, just react. So if in grade school, as we all know, for example, strep is rampant. So you have a third grader surrounded by kids who are sick, and if they have the propensity for this disorder, then they may react behaviorally without even coming down with the typical symptoms of the infection. That's kind of a long answer to your question, but basically we were fortunate because I had the blood test to more or less, shall we say, prove it. Even with that, it was tough to find treatment. So you really, if you suspect this, have to pursue finding a physician who is on board and familiar with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I can think where there's so many other places that they might initially look. Like, did a trauma unknown to the parents happen and cause this behavior, or, you know, such as bedwetting or something? I mean, I can imagine that it just looks like there's multiple tunnels to have to travel through to figure out what's going on.
Well, the other difficulty with it, with getting the diagnosis, is if you have a younger child, there is less of a pattern of behavior. So my son was 12. He had a long history. His teachers knew what he was like. His friends knew what he was like. It was very clear that something very unusual was going on. With a really young child where you don't have that long history, a lot of times well-meaning teachers, for example, their first reaction is, well, something must be happening in the home. And maybe nothing is happening in the home. And so I think that I would encourage providers and teachers to really listen to the parent, particularly the mother, rather than feeling that it must fit into some sort of preconceived notion about what's happening in the child's life.
Are there specialists that work in pandas and PANS, or obviously we would start at our pediatrician, but are there specialists that we can seek out? Because this sounds like, to me, as we get into this, I know from my own experience getting diagnosed, but I would be just so much more panicked, I suppose, if it was my own child and displaying these things.
There are specialists, and in fact, on my website, which you can find most easily, is pandashelp.com.
Pandashelp.com. We'll have that up at Understanding Autoimmune, everyone.
Pandashelp.com. And I have a link there on the right side. There's a blue box where you can click on that link, and that will send you to a list of providers in different states. Those are providers whose names have been given to me by other parents. Unfortunately, a lot of pediatricians are not willing to really consider this. And I tell parents to really trust their gut. And you know your child better than anyone else. And if you are certain that there is a little more going on here, excuse me, than tics that a boy or a girl is going to grow out of, then I think you have to pursue that. And I'm a lawyer, so I didn't really mind when doctors told me that I was probably wrong, because it just rolled off my back. That's not necessarily true for everyone. Lawyers are often told they're wrong, and so we're kind of used to it. And I left no stone unturned, and as a result, my son is very healthy and well.
Now, a question about this. You started to notice the changes, and there was a period of time when there's sort of like, what's going on? And so there's a period of time here. Does this undiagnosed infection, I don't know the right words, I'll say, continue to bloom? Or, I mean, is there a timeline that we have to really pursue this very vigorously because it's an infection?
Well, certainly, as with any disease, the earlier you intervene, the easier it is and the better the result. So if you have a stage one cancer and you immediately intervene, you're in a much better shape than if you don't realize it until stage four. So that's pretty much true of any kind of a medical disorder. Does it reach the point where you can no longer intervene? I don't know that to be true. I just think it becomes more complicated. And I will say that most of the doctors listed on my website are the doctors who parents end up seeing because they have been dismissed by, let's say, the first level of providers. So a pediatrician has told them, no, she's going to grow out of that. And then maybe they see, I don't know who else they might, maybe they even see someone like I'm getting little notes here. I probably should have shut all that down. The sooner you could get to one of those specialists, the better.
Yeah. Awesome. Because I'm thinking that I'm curious about things like in some research I did on it, talked about aggression and other, I don't know, I don't want to sort of like...
Yeah, aggression is...
quantify them, like wetting the bed is worse than aggression or whatever. Right. But are there times that you've seen as does the pattern, once they're cured, I guess they've gone through the process and the infection is no longer there.
Uh-huh.
Have you noticed, are there times where a lot of the behaviors have just become habitual?
They do become habitual. So it's also very important to combine it with some sort of a cognitive behavioral therapy. The analogy I use in Childhood Interrupted is if you've been biting your nails for a number of years, it's very tough to just one day stop. And so if you have had certain, particularly with obsessive compulsive disorder, I would think that would be more likely than aggression. I don't know that aggression, I don't think I would put that in the same category as some of the compulsive behaviors the kids have to engage in. So you, a child may have to unlearn that. If a child has been unable to leave the house without checking the door three times, or has to repeat certain phrases again and again before he or she can start their homework. I'm making all of this up, obviously, because each right. child is different. Even though each child is different, their behaviors do tend to fit into some pretty solid categories. So there are behaviors around leaving the house. There are behaviors around going to school, if they even can get to school. There are behaviors and rituals around washing their hands. And so if those things have been done for long periods of time, they may have to see a cognitive behavioral therapist who helps the child work their way through why those behaviors are no longer necessary. I think if you intervene really quickly, let's say you happen to be the maybe one person I've received an email from who happened to maybe see an episode on television that mentioned this, and suddenly their child suddenly one day wakes up and is very different, and they think, wow, I wonder if this kiddo could have an infection, and they rush the child to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician says, oh my goodness, I think maybe the child could have strep. I'm going to put this child on a course of antibiotics while we run a test and wait for the results. I mean, this like never happens, okay? And so
I'm thinking that
they immediately put the child on a 10-day course of penicillin or whatever, and all the behaviors go away, and it never happens again. Okay, well, good for them. That's the very unusual story. And that child wouldn't need help. But That's not the way it usually works. Usually this goes on for months, if not years, before usually the mother stumbles on the information, starts bringing it to physicians. The physicians tell her she's wrong, and she keeps going and eventually gets her child to a specialist, and then that specialist treats the child. And at that point, the child's been sick for quite some time, and a lot of these behaviors are ingrained.
Yeah, and I hear that story about a lot of autoimmune, very similar story of, but there's something wrong, it's all in your head, or some other rendition of that. Yeah. This is, oh my gosh. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some more with Beth Allison Maloney about PANDAS and PANS, and that's pediatric autoimmune neurodegenerative disease associated with strep and other pathogens. Quite a title there. We'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Beth Allison Maloney, and she's the author of Saving Sammy and Childhood Interrupted. She is also known as the de facto national attorney advocate for the recognition and treatment of pandas and pans. And I had in my notes here, we were just talking during that commercial break about pandas and pans. And in my notes from exploring it, I've been saying pediatric autoimmune neurodegenerative disease associated with strep and other pathogens. And Beth pointed out that it's really pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disease associated with strep and other pathogens. So Beth, let's get into this part about inflammation and how inflammation can cause behavioral changes. And is this inflammation just of the brain with the strep, or does inflammation, do they have problems throughout their whole body?
I think, and I'm not a doctor, that it is inflammation throughout your body. But what the inflammation does is it allows the blood-brain barrier to open. So usually our brains are separated from the rest of our bodies by a barrier, a very tight network of capillaries, and things don't get into our brains. So when we have the flu, we can be so sick, but our brain is fine. Our brain is protected. However, when that barrier is inflamed and open, things will get into the brain that should not be there. And this is why some doctors find that it's helpful to administer something called a steroid burst, which means giving the patient a certain limited number of steroids for a certain number of days, because if the behaviors improve as a result of that, then they really recognize that inflammation, what steroids do is to reduce the inflammation. And so when the inflammation's reduced and the children do better, that will often help them with the diagnosis. And it makes sense, because if you think, I'm trying to think of a good example here, if and this is not a medical example, but if a child runs through a patch of poison ivy and they're allergic, they blow up, their body blows up. And so sometimes that happens internally as well. So that's what a gluten allergy is. You have an allergy in your system. You can't eat gluten, because if you do, you're creating inflammation. That's one of the things that you're doing. So this is also why children will often behaviorally do better for if they are put on an over-the-counter anti-inflammatory like naproxen or ibuprofen, because it's reducing inflammation. And one of the things you want to do as a parent in order to help that is to have the child on an anti-inflammatory diet. So for example, sugar is a very inflammatory food. So you don't want the children to have sugar or food that breaks down into sugar. Sugar happens to be particularly difficult because sugar feeds bacteria. And since bacteria is the cause of the underlying problem, one bacteria or another, whether it be strep or Lyme or mycoplasma, you don't want to be feeding it. So you want to eliminate sugar or foods that break down into sugar, and those tend to be white foods such as white potatoes, white bread, white rice, those foods will quickly break down into sugar and feed the bacteria.
Wow. So involved, just like every other autoimmune condition that I've been exploring in this journey, this healing journey. Oh my gosh. I'm curious, is one thing that the listener wrote in was about this idea of it being called encephalitis.
Yes.
And is that a completely different diagnosis than PAND or PANSS, or is that a...
No, I think that what is within the medical community, PANDAs and PANS like a trigger to some rather difficult reactions. If it is viewed as an autoimmune encephalitis, I think there's a larger acceptability of that positioning of the disorder. That's the way I see it. But that is what it is. It is an autoimmune because you are producing antibodies. You can't stop producing the antibodies. And so you have an autoimmune and encephalitis going on. And the nature of encephalitis, as I understand it, is that it will, things will cross into your blood-brain barrier. So it really is, I see it as being pretty much one and the same, but I'm not a doctor, so that's just what I think.
Well, no, it's important. You have some real-life mom experience, and I think finding out from real-life moms on this type of thing is critically important. In all your work on this, what are some other things you've heard from other parents and the difficulty in getting diagnosed and some workarounds they found out?
Well, one of the things that really troubles me that I do want to speak to is that there are certain physicians who are so adamant about the fact that these disorders don't exist, that they will begin accusing mothers of having psychiatric conditions such as Munchausen by proxy, and that the mothers are medically abusing their children, and that the mothers are doctor shopping. And those types of allegations can result in some really serious concerns. So, for example, notifying child protection services that they should file a petition to take custody of the children. I don't want to terrify people, but it happens. I represent parents in those cases. And you do need to be very cognizant of the fact that not everybody is on your side. And if you have the feeling that things are moving in a direction that's really not comfortable, don't keep going in that direction. Don't keep seeing a doctor who keeps telling you you're wrong. Do not feel, if you ever end up in a situation in a hospital because your child's having a terrible time and you take them to the emergency room and a social worker comes in and starts quizzing you about how many doctors you've seen, I would not assume that that person has your best interest at heart. And I think one of the things that parents do is assume that if they just explain things correctly, everybody will understand. And that's not always the case. In fact, I think it's rarely the case. So if you find yourself in that kind of a situation, you should basically leave as quickly as you can, because it can become quite dangerous very, very, very soon.
Wow. Just one more thing on the journey here of trying to get your kid well to be aware right. of. Oh my gosh. I'm thinking of myself and my own healing journey of, I'm not sure it was really accused, but we'll say questioned about doctor shopping. And I can imagine just my own, as my own, with my own children, much more emotion would be tied around, but help them get well. And I guess at times you could look a little.
Well, it just depends. You know, I had to take my son, we went through 9 doctors before I found the right doctor. Now, and even after we knew what was involved, and I was trying to find some help more I live in Maine, and I had to take him to New Jersey for treatment. And I was trying to find help, at least in Boston, which would be closer than going to Maine. And still, I was told that it was wrong, that this is just not, you know, this was what he had, Tourette. I was told by one, he has Tourette's syndrome. And really, the best thing you can do is go home and adjust to the fact that this is what's wrong. Now, I said, thank you very much. And we went. The mistake would have been, first of all, probably nobody would have made these allegations against me because I'm a lawyer and they're just not going to do it as quickly, or, you know, they're a little more careful. But the mistake would have been for me to argue with that doctor or tell him that he was incorrect or he didn't have his information. Or when, if they began really asking me about it, for me to have said, I've seen 9 different doctors and, you know, this is how long it took me to get an answer. And I've done everything I can. And there was this hospital and that hospital. And then I went here and then I went there. Just don't even say it. Just say thank you and leave. Mm. All of that potentially can come back to really hurt.
Now, I can see where, not only from this angle of child protective services, that type of thing, but I'm curious, backing up in the diagnosis here, I guess my question is, I'm thinking about all the different things, because I'm thinking in my own cases where I was diagnosed with a number of autoimmune conditions that didn't quite check all the boxes.
Right.
I'd go and I'd do Dr. Google and I'd read the symptoms or the, I'm like, maybe, mm-hmm. but not really. And wondering about this, I'm like, knowing, and at what point do we say, well, maybe it isn't PANDAS or PANS, maybe it is a different diagnosis. And I'm thinking about this woman who wrote us, who said that the blood work still is normal, but it's not quite in the middle of the range. You know, I hate these blood works where they say the average is, you know, normal is 50 to 250 and you're at, you know, 249. And they go, no problem.
Right, right. Well, I think that in that kind of a situation, again, until you as the parent are really convinced that you have turned over every stone, and I know it sounds almost as if I'm giving you conflicting information, because on the one hand, I'm saying maybe you're going to see 9, 12, 15 doctors, but you don't necessarily need to tell everybody that. But mm-hmm. until you are really certain that this has been ruled out, until you have found someone who really is an expert and is knowledgeable, and that person is able to say, I've treated 35 children with this, I just don't think this is what it is. If you reach that point, then I think you probably will have to pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't accept that information from someone who doesn't have the level of expertise to really be able to sort it out. And if they're not able to give you then a diagnosis of what they do think it is, for example. So if you just have a doctor who says, nah, it's not what it is, and doesn't really seem to have the level of expertise, having seen it present in many different ways, have treated children with it, and you're comfortable with the fact that they have that level of knowledge, then if you're not talking to that person, then I think that you haven't ruled it out.
Great advice. We need to take one final quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to find out more about PANDAS and PANS from Beth Allison Maloney, as well as more about her 2 books, Saving Sammy and Childhood Interrupted. We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Beth Allison Maloney. She's the author of Saving Sammy, which was a memoir about her son and the diagnosis of PANDAS and how he and his mom saved him, basically, because it was a very difficult time to get diagnosed. And she also has written the book Childhood Interrupted. And one of the things that we've been talking about tonight is when your son Sammy was first diagnosed, how difficult it was. But it sounds like maybe it's still somewhat difficult. Are there clinics? I know when I got diagnosed with my autoimmune condition, I found a clinic that specialized in exactly what I had, and that's when the healing really started. Are there groups and clinics that help people specifically with PANDAS and PAN?
There are. There is a clinic at the University of Arizona, which probably has been around the longest in terms of servicing families from beyond the greater area of that clinic. Stanford has a clinic, but it's very limited geographically. I think you have to live within 60 miles of the clinic itself. The University of Arkansas has just started a clinic. And there's at least one other plan. There's one planned at UCLA, but I'm not aware that there's been a tremendous amount of progress made there. Probably if you were traveling from out of state, I would look into Arizona first to see whether they could help you. And they've done a really good job in that state of getting information out to pediatricians. So my sense of things is that in Arizona, the condition is recognized at a much earlier stage than in other states.
Which brings up a question for me. As far as, does insurance cover this? Sometimes these rare types of things, you can be not only battling to save your child, but also insurance companies and legislation. And is it covered?
It depends on the treatment. So for example, if a child has a routine course of antibiotics, we all know that gets covered. If the child has long-term antibiotics, sometimes it's covered, sometimes it isn't covered. If the child needs a treatment IVIG, that will often not be covered. And one of the steps that's been taken in a number of states, motivated and led by parents, is to have legislation passed within the states, providing that private insurers do have to provide coverage for these conditions. That is off to, I don't want to say a slow start, I'd say slow and steady. There are 5 states so far that have passed the legislation. There are a number of other states where it's being considered. I'm very disappointed to say that in my home state, where we worked incredibly hard, just 2 days ago, the bill was turned down, and I found that personally offensive, given the fact that the person who wrote the 2 books is me, and I live here. However, that's the way it goes. So hopefully that'll change in the future, but parents are trying throughout the country. Right.
Now, if you know your child has PANDAS and PANS, are there groups around that you can get legislatively involved and just involved in creating more awareness?
Yes. In just about, I think, every state, there are actions going on. And there is a Facebook page. Actually, I can't remember the name of it offhand, but certainly if you go to my website and click at the bottom, there's a little Facebook icon, and that will put you through to my Facebook author page. And if you sent me a note, I would be happy to put you in touch with the people who are doing it all over the country, because I think, can't remember what the name of the page is at this moment, but that would be a great way to connect with other parents who are working on that.
Fantastic, because one of the things that I have found, and I'm sure you have too, that the louder you can and more majority group people you can get, the faster things can get done. And it sounds like this is something that really needs to be, people need to be made aware of. It would be so easy to misdiagnose and miss the proper treatment.
True. That's very true. We somehow have to get the American Academy of Pediatrics to get on board here. It's not on board. It's very solicitous of infectious disease doctors and neurologists who don't believe that behavioral disorders can be caused by infections. And I don't know what it's going to take to get them to swing around, but somehow that has to happen. Maybe if someone in leadership has a child who has this, that will change things, because unfortunately, sometimes that's what it takes. Either that or a very big name celebrity whose child has this.
Oh, it's unfortunate. It's that way with many autoimmune conditions, what I like to call the invisible diseases, invisible infections. And as our listener who wrote in said, you know, the initial blood work is normal, and then they just write you off on all of those things. We're just about out of time. Tell us more about your website, as well as where can we find your books?
You can find the books through my website. You can also find them on Amazon. I try to have information on the website that's helpful to parents. Again, they can find it easily with pandashelp.com. And one of the things they're very different books. Saving Sammy is our personal journey and what it took for us to get there and for him to become well. Childhood Interrupted is really a how-to manual or a guide. And it, I think, is very helpful. What I realized is that I was receiving tens of thousands of emails from parents all over the country. And even though each email was different, they tended to fall into the same category. So what should I be feeding my child? Or how do I work with doctors? Or what should be happening at school? And so I tried to address a lot of those general topics through chapters, and parents really like it. You know, they like both the books. So hopefully other people will too.
That's pandashelp.com, everyone, to be able to find all of that out. And since you brought it up, I'm just curious, what are some tips you have for dealing with children who have PANDAS, let's say we've been diagnosed, and dealing with schools?
Well, I think the schools need an education, because most of them also are not familiar. Certainly a child who has one of these disorders is going to need some accommodations at school. If generally it's going to be a 504 plan, because an IEP is, if you don't have an IEP, an individualized educational program, in place before the child has PANDAS, then chances are you're going to have a 504 or has PANDAS. So a 504 is going to give accommodations, for example, additional time to take tests, or if the child can feel that there's an exacerbation coming on of behaviors, that they have an opportunity to actually leave the classroom and go to a place where they feel a little more comfortable for a while. So maybe there's a period of time where the child has late starts or has the opportunity to leave the classroom early. Different things like that that will help your child. Now, you will have to get a note from a doctor recommending those accommodations. So again, your doctor has to be on board with the diagnosis and the need for accommodations. And so I've found when parents say, I can't get anybody at the school to really believe me, or frankly, I just say, give them the book. Maybe that'll help. Because I think particularly if you read Saving Sammy, it's so much, the description I would say is mothers will say, I felt like I was standing in your kitchen watching this, because it really is so descriptive of what you're living through at home. And if you haven't been through the situation, I think it's very helpful to have that type of insight into what really is happening inside the home.
Fantastic. And we're just down to the last couple of minutes. Any final thoughts before we have to leave?
Well, one of the things I say in the book is that we are the CEOs of our children's lives. And nobody is going to make it happen for them other than you. So you are the person who knows them best. Don't let a doctor talk you out of what you know is in fact going on with your child. Don't blame yourself. This isn't something you did. This is something that happened. Your kids are not capable at that particular time of behaving the way you wish they would or someone else wishes they would. It produces behaviors. If a child got hit by a truck and ended up in a wheelchair, you wouldn't stand in front of him and say, why can't you get up and walk? That's what this is like. And so just try to be patient with it and understand that it can be something that can be taken care of, and one day you'll look back on it and remember it. And that doesn't have to be the way it is every day now for the rest of his life or her life or your life. Just maintain the belief that this can get better and keep going until you figure it out. That's what I would say.
Thank you, Beth. Awesome. That is such great advice for this hour here, everyone. That's Beth Allison Maloney, and she is the de facto national attorney advocate for the recognition and treatment of PANDAS and PANS, as we've been hearing, as well as the author of Saving Sammy and Childhood Interrupted. Everyone, have a great week, and thank you, Beth, for taking time out of your busy, busy schedule. I know that all of your work is so desperately needed, and want to show gratitude and appreciation to you, not only for the work that you're doing to bring awareness of this, but also taking the time to share with us so we can continue to build interest and information and advocates for you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for recording this and distributing it and helping to bring the information to more and more people.
Absolutely. That's what the Autoimmune Hour is all about, everyone. Thank you. Thank you, listeners, for sending in your notes and messages and questions here. And as always, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me next week for another brand new episode. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.